Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, it's been over 24 hours since the announcement of the Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan trade. And the shockwaves are still rippling. I said this yesterday, right? The trade's not a one-day story. It's a one-year story, and it's already proving to be just that. In fact, it's already become like gospel that Kawhi does not want to play in Toronto. That's already gospel. However, the Sporting News took it one step further, reporting, quote, there have been indications that he would sit out the entire season if necessary, and though that step would be drastic and unprecedented in today's game, Toronto has forced the situation into uncharted territory by acquiring a player who has made it clear he does not want to be there, end quote. Let me repeat that first part of that sentence once again, and I quote, there have been indications that he would sit out the entire season if necessary, end quote. Wait, what? Sit out the entire season? Sit out the entire season because he doesn't like Toronto? Look, before people start freaking out and panicking over Kawhi Leonard holding out the entire year and what that would mean, and yes, NBA Reddit, I know about the suggestion that he should enter Canada illegally, declare refugee status, and then get sent back to the United States, thus forcing the Raptors' hands. I've heard that theory. Let's go ahead and pump the brakes on that for a minute. If this guy does sit out an entire season, he's going to lose $20 million. And then due to a clause in the CBA, he'd run the risk of losing his free agent status for next year. 20 mil and free agent status potentially. It's a hell of a lot to give up. A hell of a lot to give up because you don't want to go to Toronto. I mean, you have to really, really, really not want to go someplace if you're willing to risk all of that. Now, there are cities that I might not like, and I want to be clear about this. I like Toronto. I really like Toronto. But even if I didn't love Toronto the way that I do, I'm not paying $20 million and risking my future free agency just because I don't like Toronto. Hell, I can make an easy argument for Toronto. They've got the tallest freestanding structure in the Western Hemisphere. Forget 20 mil. That's worth that trip alone. And that's before we get to the beaches, the award-winning restaurants, Canada's only museum devoted entirely to ceramics. So for all you morons with your witty flannel as currency, Prime Minister Bryan Adams jokes, you can all step off. Kawhi is not going to delay going to Canada so he can miss the denim harvest. The Raptors are not going to pay him in maple syrup and pelts. Kawhi Leonard has more than 20 million reasons to show up in Toronto. And with the exchange rate, it's more than 26 million loonies to show up in Toronto. You really want to give up all that? For who? For what? Because you don't like Toronto. If Kawhi actually does sit out the season because he doesn't want to be with the Raptors, my man does not have a leg problem. He's got a head problem. And I doubt that happens. This feels like saber rattling at best. Just some pure speculation at worst. Some hot taking, even worse than that. Now that said, the fact that it's even gotten to this point, the fact that the idea would ever even come up, says about how Kawhi has completely lost control of the story. This guy's one of the best players in the league, and that's getting lost in all of this. He's now on the verge of coming off as one of the biggest kooks in the league. And if part of the idea was to get out of San Antonio so he could raise his profile, and even that is debatable, he's raising his profile, all right. He's just doing it in the worst way possible. So now would be a very good time, Kawhi, to get in front of a mic and explain your side. Because from the outside, it seems like complete chaos. From the outside, it seems like you and your advisors have no plan whatsoever. Well, aside from the plan to hide you when the Spurs come to check on you. I mean, are you going to be hiding in some hamper when the Raptors come to look for you? This guy may have had a really good reason for wanting out of San Antonio and a really good reason for not wanting to go to Toronto, but we wouldn't know what it is because this guy won't say jack. Kawhi, it's time. In fact, it was time long ago. Get in front of a camera. Stop hiding from the Spurs. Stop hiding from everybody else. Get in front of a camera and own it before you do any more damage to your rep and to your cred. And no, this guy's not going to sit out a year so he doesn't have to go to Toronto. You know, for who? For what? For 20 mil and possibly losing free agency? Come on. Rex Hoggard is my guest. Rex, great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me back.
Rex, always good to have you on the show, especially during a major. Now, you're on site at Carnoustie. So before we get into some of the individual performances so far, how is that track playing today?
Oh, hard and fast. I mean, I'm sure folks watching at home just look at this and wonder why are they playing the Open Championship on a cow pasture. But it's really perfect. I mean, it's like trying to hit it down a runway that's, you know, bordered by pop bunkers everywhere and rough and out of bounds. And it's a very unique test, and you have to hand it to the RNA. I love the fact that when we get over here to this championship, you get what Mother Nature gave you. And it's been one of the driest summers on record here in the UK, and we end up with just these crazy conditions where players are hitting the ball 400-plus yards. You don't know how far five irons are going. It's a very unique test when it comes to golf.
Rex Hoggard joining us. Sounds pretty much like we'd expect. Now, Tony Finau said that he hit a 3-wood 420 yesterday, which is absolutely insane. Patrick Harrington hit a 457-yard drive earlier this week, which is ridiculous. As a player, when you're doing that, what kind of adjustments do you have to make to your game?
I thought it was fascinating. It's kind of golf nerdy stuff, but I never hear these phrases. But they're talking about ending numbers and rollout and where the ball's going to actually stop, because you can try to weave in between these bunkers, but you're much better off trying to take one side out of play and carry in this bunker. But take the sixth hole, for example. It's 275 yards to clear a pair of pop bunkers that are down the right side of the fairway. But you only have 25 yards before you reach another set of pop bunkers. And it doesn't matter what you hit, it's not going to stop in 25 yards. So it's such a different test for guys to try to wrap their mind around. Yeah, I can stand up here and blast it, but I don't know where it's going to go. It's going to catch a bump. It's going to roll. It's going to roll into a bunker. The good news is, because it's been so dry, the rough's not nearly as penal as what we normally get. So if you end up in the rough, you're still in a decent spot. But as we're watching Brooks Koepka, who has spent, every time I look up at the TV, he's hitting out of one of those bunkers. Once you get in there, it's tough to get out.
Rex Hoggard, my guest. All right, Rex, so having said all that, what kind of a player does this favor?
There was two schools of thought, and it was fascinating to me because you had one school of thought that included Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth, who said, look, we're just going to hit irons. We're going to be very measured. We're going to try to take all the trouble out of play, play underneath some of the trouble. And then the other school of thought were the bombers, the Dustin Johnsons and Brooks and Rory McIlroys of the world, who decided that I'm just going to tee up driver everywhere and just hit it down there as far as I can, and if I'm in the rough, I'm going to wedge it out. I'm still not sure which one of those is going to pay off. But it is worth telling that Kevin Kisner, who is not a bomber by any stretch of the imagination, is leading right now. So right now, I think the guys who have decided to be a little bit more tactical and measured maybe have the advantage.
Rex Hoggard, live at Carnoustie, covering the Open. So Jordan Spieth, Rex, opened up with a 1-over-72, but said that he felt like it was, quote, recoverable. What do you make of what you saw from him in the first 14 holes and then the final four holes?
Well, I mean, I think Carnoustie famously has wrecked so many cards. It's where good scores go to die, right? I mean, we've seen as John Vandeveld being the perfect example back in 1999. I don't think this really was a golf course-related thing. I think he didn't make the right mental choices, and he talked about not executing the shot. And things came apart on the 15th when he made a bogey, and he said, I hit the wrong club off the tee. It was a 4-iron, and hit the wrong club into the green, which was a 6-iron. And he brought the front bunker into play, and it plugged, and like I just talked about, once you get in there, unlike any other major, unlike any other golf course you play in the United States, these bunkers are true hazards. I mean, it's a one-stroke penalty at the very least when you get in one of those.
Rex Hoggard joins us. Rex, Tiger Woods is out on the course right now, and it's his first Open since 2015, and it's taking place at the course where he played the 1995 Scottish Open. What do you make of how he talked about that experience from 23 years ago?
It's interesting to see how he reflects now, Jim. I got to be honest with you. We've never had that throughout the course of his career. He was always looking forward. He wasn't one to sit back and think about all these nostalgic things like first introduction to Lynx golf. And he told this great story about just wanting to hit 100-yard shots, regardless of the club, 5-iron to pitching wedge, when he first got on the range in Carnoustie back in 95. And his dad was like, aren't you ever going to hit anything more than just a 100-yard shot? No, I don't want to. This is so much fun. And it was really nice to hear that, to be quite frank with you, because we never get that sort of introspection from him. I think when it comes to Lynx golf, certainly it brings out the best in him because it requires so much creativity. We always talked about his power and what he could do to golf courses, but I think he truly enjoys it when it's like this. If you look at his maybe two best Open Championships, 2000 at St. Andrews and 06 at Royal Liverpool, it was very similar to this. Brown and bouncy and hard, and you had to think your way around the golf course. So I think this really brings out his best.
The Thursday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by the best place to buy tickets online, Fan Exchange. Bust on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. A great experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and then worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Again, promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Rex sees out quickly. He's 2 under right now. And in recent years, the Open has had a number of older golfers make a run at the jug. Why is that? And could you see Tiger doing that this week?
Well, this was another point that he made. Someone asked him, is this your best chance, not just this year, but as you get older? And he agreed, absolutely. And he pointed to Tom Watson, who, of course, famously, you know, made a run at the Clara Jug at Turnberry a few years ago. I'm forgetting the actual age now, but it was around 110, I think. But you had Greg Norman, you know, a few years ago in his 50s that did it. It mitigates the power, but as Tiger gets older, as players get older, they can't hit it as far as the younger guys. And I think it really relies on a lot of institutional knowledge. It relies on your ability to understand that you need to be creative, that you're going to hit different shots, and no one in the game right now does that like Tiger Woods, and I kind of agree with him. He thinks he can compete here well into his 50s, and I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
All right, so before I let you go, what are you looking to see for the rest of today that might give you a sense as to who's going to be there at the end of Sunday?
Well, Justin Thomas is kind of the wild card right now, and he's right on the edge. He's just two strokes back, and I think he's got a couple holes to play, and he could make things very interesting because he is the type of player, he's sort of the outlier that I just explained, where Kevin Kisner took more of the tactical approach. Justin Thomas can hit the ball a long way, and if you get those two guys suddenly both in the mix and right up there at the top, they can separate themselves really quickly. Now, that being said, the real test will come this weekend. It's going to be more what we expect from the Open Championship. It's going to be wind and it's going to be rain. So even as it stands right now with the lead of 5 under, I don't think the winning score is going to be more than 7 or 8 under at this point.
Listen, there are a few perks that come along with hosting a podcast, but one of my favorites is getting hooked up with a box of awesome from Bespoke Post every single month. The After Smackoff cocktail that I'm pouring tomorrow is going straight into my highball Bespoke decanting glasses. Cannot wait. These guys are upgrading my style and my life one box at a time. You know, it's kind of like a present from myself to myself once a month. I'm great like that. Now, you too can experience it at boxofawesome.com. Once again, boxofawesome.com. This month's box was a cocktail aging kit complete with a decanter, two glasses, and sticks of oak. Bespoke Post scouts out quality and unique products around the world and delivers them to you each month without high retail markups. To get started, just go to boxofawesome.com and answer a few short questions that will help them get a feel for the boxes that will best go with your style. To receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to boxofawesome.com and enter the promo code ROME at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, promo code ROME for 20% off your first box. Once again, Bespoke Post, theme boxes for guys that give a damn. I love it. You will too. Mikey Garcia joins me in studio. Mikey, it is so nice to see you. How are you?
Pleasure to have me here. You know, a pleasure to be here. Just appreciate everything. You know, everything's going well. I'm very excited for this upcoming fight. You know, so I hope, you know, everything goes well and people get a chance to come see me and enjoy the night.
I'd like to hear that. It's going to be a great fight. Really good showdown. So we're about a week out and you're going to fight Robert Easter. It's a unification bout at Staples. So what's it mean to not only get a chance to unify, but you get to do it back home?
It's great. Ever since I started, you know, boxing, you know, it's always a dream of a fighter to become champion and unify titles and all that. And now I get to do that and to bring that fight here in LA, you know, it's just means more. It's special because I haven't actually fought here in 7 years now.
Right.
I haven't had a fight here in LA, in California, in 7 years. So to bring a fight like this, you know, for my local fan base, for my people who support me, you know, get to see me live. It's just a special treat.
You know, Mikey, you talk about the fans who get to see you. I think you're different in the sense that you understand this. For instance, you understand that when fans come to see you fight, they've made a sacrifice. They've given up their time. They've given up their money. You know how hard it is to make money. You understand those things. What's it mean to you to know that they've made that commitment to you? And then how important is it for you to put on a show when they put their money out there like that?
Look, it's the most important thing for me. And the most emotional moment of any fight for me is when I walk out from my locker room into the arena. And the music starts going and the fans get up and start cheering you on, trying to reach over from the stands to shake your hand. It almost brings tears to my eyes sometimes. It's almost unbelievable to me that all these people are there to see me. They spend time, you know, or maybe got days off work, or maybe they made a trip out of it. Whatever it is, you know, they did all that just to come see me for a few moments, for a few minutes. You know, that's incredible. And that's why I appreciate that so much. And that's why I owe it to them to be accessible, to be the fighter that they love, to be, you know, easygoing, where I give them fans, my fans, a picture, an autograph. You know, it doesn't take anything away from me. I owe it to them, you know. And if they're taking the time of their lives to see me, well, I owe it to them to deliver in the ring and give them a fight to remember.
WBC lightweight champion Mikey Garcia joins me in studio. Once again, that fight is July 28th on Showtime. Styles make fights. When you look at Easter, what concerns you the most about him in that matchup?
Well, Easter brings different tools. You know, he's actually very tall and has a longer reach, so he has height and reach advantages. I have experience. I have other fights that I've had against taller opponents. We made the right training. We made different strategies. We worked on different strategies with different sparring partners. My brother and my dad have helped me a lot in the development of my career. And with the experience that I've had and them together, my team, I think it's the best that I could ask for. I'm well prepared. I can maybe box on the outside, catch him reaching in. Maybe I have to put pressure and work the body. I'm ready to do whatever it takes to win. But the adjustments will have to be done inside of the ring on the 28th. You know, his height and reach are something that I need to, you know, be careful.
Mikey Garcia joins us. You mentioned your father and your brother. You know how it is in boxing, right? You've seen fathers and sons train and fight. It does not always go well. In fact, a lot of times it doesn't go well at all, yet you have your father and your brother working with you. What's that like?
No, it's actually a very good atmosphere, a very good relationship. They know me better than anybody. I know them. They understand what I'm capable of doing. They are observing me every day in the gym. My dad and my brother sometimes aren't quite on the same page. My brother wants me to box and be safe and be, you know, careful and be defensive. Well, my dad sometimes wants a little more out of me, a little more action, a little more aggressive. So I give them both a round or two apiece. That way they can all be happy. But overall, everything's very, very well, you know, placed for me.
I think it's amazing, right? I mean, they both have different viewpoints on this, and you try and make them both happy. I think fight fans who know your background, but a lot of people watching right now or listening do not. Let me go back a little bit. You were born in Oxnard.
Yes.
And your father, Eduardo, made a lot of sacrifices. A lot of sacrifices when he came from Mexico. He was raising six kids in a mobile home, working long hours in the strawberry fields, which is absolutely backbreaking work.
Yes.
What have you learned from him about sacrifice and hard work?
Well, he, you know, he had a one-bedroom mobile home. I was actually born there still, so I was a seventh. You know, I still remember seeing him come home, you know, with the pants full in mud and red stains on the clothes from working the strawberry fields along with my mom. My mom was actually, I think, up to like 4 or 5 months pregnant, still working, you know, and she was pregnant with me. I mean, it's just, you know, struggle, you know, the sacrifices are there, but it's all with the, you know, mindset to be someone better in life, you know, that American dream. You know, they come as immigrant people from Mexico, from other, you know, cultures, other backgrounds. They don't even speak the language of, you know, they don't speak English, but they did all this, you know, to give us a better life, to give us another opportunity, you know, like my brothers, myself. And so what we've learned, or what I pick up the most, is that, you know, anything is possible if you put your mind to it. And he had a dream of being a champion trainer, boxing trainer, and he's accomplished that. And I'm giving him even more just because he showed me all that. He worked hard, so hard for so many years. Now it's my job to make sure that I fulfill his dreams.
Mikey Garcia joins us. I mean, it's amazing. He comes from Mexico, one bedroom, mobile home.
Yes.
Your brother Robert was a world champion.
Yes.
He's a legend in Oxnard. He's featured on a mural there. What was it like growing up as the brother of Robert Garcia?
That was actually pretty fun. Growing up, I was like in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and my friends would ask me for autographs and pictures, and you know, everybody knew me that...
His autograph or your autograph?
His autograph.
Okay, right.
You know, everybody knew that I was, you know, his brother, and some kids wouldn't really believe me. They'd be like, no, you're not. There's no way you can be brothers with Robert. You know, he's a champion. He's this, he's that. Well, yeah, you know, I'm his brother, and I'd bring pictures or whatever whenever they asked me. My teachers would ask me for gloves or autographs, you know. So that was pretty cool. I actually got away with some of the classes by giving them autographs and stuff. They'd come and break on some homework assignments.
You know it. You got to work it.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, that's really funny. In addition to training your brother, now your father also trained one of my favorites, man, Fernando Vargas, back in the day. Now, I love Fernando Vargas. I loved watching him fight, and you're probably too young, but he used to come on this program, dude. He is so funny. You know, Fernando, man, he's just got this it. He's got this charisma. He's got this energy about him. When he walks in the room, you know he's there.
Oh, you know.
And, dude, he hated Oscar De La Hoya. And the two of these guys would go back and forth, and Fernando used to just light him up on this show. I got to know, what was it like to be around Fernando Vargas back in the day?
You know, I grew up, like I said, maybe I was 10, 11, 12 years old when Fernando was at his peak. I went to a lot of his fights, most of his fights. That energy that you're talking about, that atmosphere, you know, he walks in the room, you just know he's there. You know, that presence is felt. And it was very cool. I mean, as a kid, I was always kind of in the background just watching and observing and just impressed with how the people just, you know, surrounded him. And everybody, you know, saw Fernando as this big, you know, star. And he was, you know, he earned it. He paid his dues. He had the talk, but also walked the walk, you know. So it was just great to see him, and I saw him also work hard. I saw him at the training camps. I spent a few training camps as a kid with him. He worked his ass off. He really worked hard. He put in all the hours in the gym. So that's why he earned, you know, his position, his place. But it was very fun to be in school and everybody talking about the big fights that he had, the Trinidad fight, the Corte fight, the De La Hoya fights.
Dude, these are all legends, man. Trinidad, Corte, De La Hoya.
They were all in their prime. Legends and in their prime. And Fernando's taking on them. And he was so young. You know, it was so impressive what he was able to accomplish in such a short career and such young career. So I see all that, and it's like, you know, it's you got to tip your hat off, and we're still very close. He's actually coming here on Saturday. He's got a fighter fighting. Wesley Diana will be fighting also on the undercard, and he's training that kid.
You tell him I said what's up. And the other thing that he once said, and I believe this, you know, guys say this. I think you guys are such a different breed anyway. If you step between the ropes, you're a different cat, period, no matter who you are. But he was one of those guys who's like, man, I'd be willing to die before I lost that fight. And when he'd say things like that, he had that kind of pride.
Yes.
Before I let you go, you won your last fight in March. You became just the third fighter in history to win a title at 126, 130, 135, and 140. The other two guys to do that, Manny Pacquiao and Juan Manuel Marquez. Last month, George Foreman tweeted, quote, Mikey Garcia is my favorite boxer today. So what's it mean to hear your name mentioned with guys like Pacquiao and Marquez and to get that kind of love from George Foreman, who would normally not do something like that?
Look, it's like I said, it's unbelievable. And it's almost something that it's so incredible that my name gets to be mentioned along those names, Pacquiao, Marquez. And when I hear George Foreman tweet that, it's just so special. Like I said, it's unbelievable. I can't explain the feeling. I never imagined myself being where I'm at, and to be here, and it's still so new. It's still like, you know, something that was never a dream, you know, that I could reach, and now I'm here. It's just, you know, it just overfills you with joy. And I mean, I've seen George Foreman, you know, great, you know, history with the fights with, you know, Ali, and just a legend in its own, and he appreciates me, and he watches me, and he knows who I am. It's like,
you're his favorite fighter right now.
Wow, that's just, you know, mind blowing.
Four division champion, however, the WBC lightweight champion. He's unbeaten, 38-0, 30 by knockout, and this is a big, big fight. It's July 28th. It's on Showtime. It's at Staples Center here in Los Angeles. It is a unification bout, Garcia v. Easter. Mikey, you crushed that. Really nice to meet you. Great to have you on the program, and good luck to you, man. I'll be watching for sure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the love and support.
Let's check in with the double champ, bidding to make it three in a row. Lef, what's going on?
Hey, not much, Jimmy. I just feel awful about what happened yesterday with Mike yesterday. I mean, honestly, you know, from day one, I've just really tried to make the show better. I never meant to run him off like that. So, Mike, Dude, if you're listening, just come back, man. I mean, any way you want. I mean, come in with the Canadians, dude. Resurrect yourself again. I don't care, dude. Just come back. I mean, look, I'm even willing to extend an olive branch. I'm going to level the playing field this year. So, Jimmy, effective immediately, I have hereby fired Team Left. All the writers, all the producers, Jimmy, they're just straight fired. It was a great run. I want to thank them for their tireless contributions the past 3 years. And without them, Jimmy, you know, I'd just be an average caller, kind of like Tyler and Edmonton and Matt and Van, just like you guys now. So anyways, Jimmy, I've tweeted a memorial video featuring all the former members of my team. So go ahead and peep that. And Jimmy, I'll see you. Check that. I will talk to you tomorrow, buddy. See ya.
You're not going to see me tomorrow, but I will talk to you tomorrow. So Leff and Laguna was referencing Mike and Indy, who, quote, retired yesterday. And said, come on, Mikey, don't go, come back. Resurrect yourself, team up with somebody. I'll level the playing field by firing my entire staff of writers and producers. He said that he tweeted the video and that we should all peep it. At Leff and Laguna, I haven't seen it yet. Leff, L-E-F-F, Leff, not left, Leff. This guy will get the conversation back to where it needs to be. Let's go to Wisco. Benny in Wisco. Benny, how are you?
Oh, come on. How you doing, Jim?
Good, bud. How about you? What's up, Benny? How you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I'm actually a little bound up right now. I simply have too much cheese in my smack system. So I thought that an old school Benny in Wisco RSV brie would be the perfect way to loosen up and keep Alvin honest over there with that bell. So thanks for the string and the opportunity to share my craft on the airwaves before I process.
You owe him one, Alvin.
Thread and melt these smack off idiots tomorrow. And lots of flirting leading up to the event between the Americans and those pecorinos from Canada, Matt and Ty. And the sexual innuendos were spread pretty thick. Rome, I haven't heard that much Randy Johnson talk on the show since he was inducted into Cooperstown way back in 2015. Clean it up, guys. This is supposed to be a family show. And I don't really have much to say about Caleb's call last week, other than I found it about as appealing as trap music. It was like the audio version of a Cabernet and aged Gouda tasting party, only someone forgot the dairy. So as listeners, we were just left with a bunch of wines and a pounding headache. You played a clip of it earlier, but I must have missed that part because all I heard was, "Wah!" on Wisconsin. Now, if you think this call leaves a messy stench of cheese and rodentia behind me today, be prepared for a messier path of the souls and entrails in my competition tomorrow. And come Friday afternoon when my fans are yelling at me, Rat Boy, how many you got, Rat Boy? I'll be glad to say 5K more than I did this morning. Thank you, Jim. And as always, you can do whatever you decide to do with this call, but I do have one specific request for Alvy. Rat me. I'll see you tomorrow.
Benny, see you tomorrow. I was going to say, Alvy, bring up some rat. By my count, you still owe him at least two or three more dings. Go ahead, just give it to him. He's got a big fight coming up here in Los Angeles. I've got Jacksonville Jaguars cornerback A.J. Boye also coming up next hour. I have thoughts on Manny Machado. Thoughts on Larry Fedora. It's just been a wild, wild smack-off day. What the hell? Let's go back to the phones. Rolling calls. Banging telephone calls. Let's go to Bristol. Steven in Bristol. Steven, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
Correction. Steven A. in Bristol. The middle initial is important. This is the one and only Steven A. Smith from that other sports channel. The reason I called is to congratulate the Los Angeles Lakers for bringing LeBron James to Tinseltown. Mark my words, in 2 years, we're going to see the Lakers play the Celtics in the NBA Finals, and that's fine by me. Mr. Jim Rome, I have one more thing to say. I hope you give a golden ticket to Callen Gant in Vegas.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that.
The second that guy started bumping his gums, I had two thoughts. That is the worst Stephen A. Smith impression I've ever heard. And a lot of these guys are talking about Mike and Indy. Mike and Indy, who called for the first time in 355 days yesterday, had not called since the last smack off, and he called to announce his retirement. He's walking off, leaving the game, and leaving it on his own terms. That didn't last very long, I don't think, unless he's calling back to reiterate that he's still retired. Either he's still retired or he's unretiring, and there's only one way to find out. Let's go to Indianapolis, DLC, Mikey. Mike, which is it? Are you retired or not, bro?
I'm back.
Calling right now, trying to make it to 20 years apart. Steve, brother, what's up? How are you?
Jim, what's happening? It is funny that you mentioned that. Needless to say, no one has ever gone 20 years between Smack-Off wins, and no one probably will even after tomorrow. But still, I'm going to give it my all. I'll pull up my shorts to my nipples and stumble around the ring and maybe land a George Foreman shot to shock the world. It could happen. It could. UNBC beat Virginia this year. The Cavs came back from down 3-1. NASA's head wound Chael has a full-time TV gig. I'm just saying it could happen, but it probably won't. I'm just saying. The thing now that I'm trying to figure out, and the thing that people seem to do now is, you know, gather the writing team, call out all the agents in L.A., come up with the most bizarre character you can, bring them on the call with you. Like, Les is bringing Fonzie into his loop. I can't compete with that. I don't have Ralph Mouth on speed dial. Arnold's dead. And if I'm not mistaken, Scott Baio might have other important matters to tend to right about now. It's not my style. What am I going to do, bring on some bachelor nerd with me or bring on my lawyer so ABC doesn't sue me for a third time? Jim, I haven't done a tandem call in 20-plus years I've been calling this show, and I'm here to tell you I'm not about to start now. I don't think. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Jim.
Uh-oh! Stevie Carbone with the ultimate teaser, laying out all the reasons why he would never do that. It's not his deal. It's not his style. He's not wired for it. He's not getting or bringing in a tandem call. Or would he? This guy's back. He's back again. He retired yesterday. He called in earlier today to say he's back. And now he's back in the third hour. Mike in Indy, back again. Mike, now what? What's up?
Well, I was enjoying retirement, Jim. That was real. I might be relatively young, but an elite Smack-Off caller is like an elite NFL running back. I'm not the type to get 5 yards, then step out of bounds. I'm not only taking more blows than anyone else, but I'm running downfield, going out of my way to protocol as many defenders as possible. That takes a toll on you. But it was pointed out to me that with the new Leff and Laguna rule, and Leff being stripped of his last two titles, since Leff is unable to perform his duties as king, it goes to the second place guy both years. And what do you know? I was second place both years. And the thing about that is, when you have the crown, you have to defend the crown. That's Smack-Off code. So really, I have no choice. I will honor the code. And while I'm out here defending, I might as well win it, and then I'll defend that next year. You know, a few years ago, the Smack-Off had 9 total callers, and you thought about shutting the thing down. Then I came in with one of the greatest calls ever and gave the Smack-Off mouth-to-mouth. You're all welcome. I also want to call out 2 members of Leff's writing team. First of all, Evan in the Bay, who let it slip on a podcast that they had a team of 30 guys on a text chain writing Leff's call all year. That's true. And then this Rick Flores kook, who let it out of the bag what Leff's plan is for tomorrow. So I'm going to ruin that plan. Evan and Rick, these 2 imbeciles have let so many cats out of the bag that Adam Hawk had to excuse himself to the restroom for a little bit of personal time. I'll see you tomorrow, Jim.
Holy crap. Mike in Indy. Tether in Green Bay. Hey, Tether, how are you?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing good. How are you?
So good. I'm having a great day. How about you?
Oh, man. I'm having an awesome day. This is wild. I'm loving the show today. I really want to thank you for the Vine. I feel like first I should tell Liz, solid attempt on Monday. She may throw around her legend status like candy from a pinata, but really, she's just a groupie. Much like a soccer mom, she hands out juice boxes and bananas to the gang before the big show. And high fives them after, saying, good job, good effort. Soak it all in now, legendary Liz, because groupie is the closest you're ever going to come to being a Smack-Off champ. By the way, Jim, did you know that Mike in Indy was also kind enough to poke his head in on Woodscopes last Friday? Fire off some smack at left. I think it was just enough to gauge the audience and decide if he'd even have what it takes to show on Friday. Same thing he did here yesterday and today. I guess his laughter on Twitter were enough to force re-entry. We'll see if he calls again. Keep in mind, Mike, there's no cheddar for second place. Rick and Vic have been going back and forth on Twitter. That has been good times. I'm sure it's more for their entertainment than ours. Also, Vic going for the block on Rick was interesting. That play is now reversed. Seriously, though, Vic, blocking and unblocking, that's as weak as going on a national radio show. Geared around talking smack and then apologizing to people later. Just ask the groupie. She'll tell you it's a bad look. Finally, Jim, we have to talk about the Canadians. In this big marshmallow snowflake type of world, it would probably be frowned upon to not give them a safe space or place in the Smackoff rankings. So after a couple of new no-names squeak into the 11th and 12th place this year, surely 13th and 14th will need to be opened up and occupied by the Canadians to ensure their safe space. Have no worries. You can put your good luck safety pins away, gentlemen. There will be a place for you. Jim, my prediction is left will come in strong with Radio Gold, but it won't be enough for the win. Feels bad, Jim. My money is on Benny. Some of us felt like he had it all last year. This year he wins. That's it from me, man. I'm stoked for the big show tomorrow. Won't miss a minute. Lots of love. War you. Peace out.
War Lady Clones. And the Lady Clones are beefing.
War Lady Clones.
Tether in Green Bay cracking back on Liz, calling her the groupie. The groupie this, the groupie that. The VIC, Broadway Victor. Vic, you believe this, big, man?
What up, Big Perm? I mean, Big Rome. Hey, man, I sent a picture along previewing what I'm going to be wearing tomorrow as my official gear. I'm going to be rocking the luchador mask, my official Jim Rome t-shirt that I got from the jungle store, along with the Welcome to the Jungle CD, a couple of mock turtlenecks, and some jungle signage. You know, it's a sweet shirt, Rome. Your lettuce is looking on point, man. And then afterwards, after my call, I'm going to be autographing that worn game gear, and I'm going to raffle it off to one of my lucky Twitter followers. So stay tuned for that, clones. You know, Mike and Indy's back after threatening us with retirement. Damn it, Mike, you can't be playing with our emotions like that, okay? Don't tell us you're leaving. Get us all excited at the thought of never having to hear your crappy calls again. And then break our hearts by coming back in with some gimmick, okay? Dude, we all knew you weren't going anywhere, like no life, Mike. I mean, what else were you going to do? Were you going to hold your own separate little smack-off down there in UT Chattanooga? I mean, we all know you're a loser, but you're not as big of a loser as T.O., right? And Rome, after yesterday's horse crap that left pulled in triangulating the location of Straight Fire, are you frightened yet by this psychopath? I know I would be. I mean, this guy knows more about you than you. Rome, this guy probably knows all your passwords and he goes through your trash at night. I mean, I was going to say that Lev's obsession with all things Jim Rome is kind of like Fatal Attraction and you're going to come home one day to find a boiled rabbit on your stove. But now I'm thinking it's more like that movie Single White Female. Dude, Lev is trying to become you, Rome. We've been warning you about this for the past couple years. And finally, I heard Mike right now just say that he should have about 3 or 4 titles by now. Actually, Dick Flowers is the guy who should have like 3 titles by now. You know, that's Lev's executive producer, by the way, if you don't know him. And he used to work for Mark in Hollywood. You know, apparently Dick Flowers has become a bit of a clone whisperer. He takes mediocre to good smackers like Mark in Hollywood and Lev, and he whispers them up in a smack-off chance with his productions. You know, he's one of like one of these music guys behind all the top 20 Billboard hits from like Katy Perry and Taylor Swift, you know. His services are in great demand these days. Not by me, though. You see, I don't really do pop music, okay? I'm not too worried about what the current fads are, what's hot with the kids these days. I'm not going to put a DJ into my song or have some crappy rap artist come in and spit a few bars. Nah, just let me plug in my electric guitar and let me churn out some good old-fashioned power chords. I'm ready to rock.
Damn, Vic. Bodie in Pearland. Bodie, what's up, Bubba?
Hey, Bubba, I ain't changing a damn thing. You know what, Bubba? They ain't everybody in the damn jungle and Cruz Pedregon knows they ain't one, but one name going to be on the back of that car, even if I don't win. But that name is going to be some bitch. And now, how badass is that? And Mike, quit begging for stuff, you some bitch. I'm out.
Bodie. Tyler in Edmonton will be here tomorrow. He's coming in on Smack Off Eve. Tyler, what's up?
What's up, Romy? How you doing?
Good, bud. How about you?
I'm good, man. So you see what I started, Rome? Last week, I told everyone I wanted to spar, and look what we have now. Even Cruz Pedregon knows I'm probably going to win tomorrow. That's why he's offering to slap the winner on his car. And real quick, I want to address Lef referring to my gal as a hog. Man, this guy is so triggered. And I want to do it by thanking you, Rome. You know, you've always called yourself the idol maker, and that's what you did, man. I sent a few pics of the best-looking people in the jungle on CBS. A few magazine deals later, and I've more than lapped Lef as the greatest-earning clone to ever walk this earth. I don't need to creep out the host. I don't need to pay dividends to any divorced dads. I just need to do what I do best, Romy. Look amazing and run smack. You're going to regret that comment, Lef. You're going to regret that comment.
Ty, see you tomorrow.
Good night now!